Welcome to the Bomb and Gouge podcast. I'm your host, Gary Bissell. This week, I'm going to talk about fitness and how that relates to golf and even how it's changed it. I'm going to go over the U.S. Amateur, give a recap of Alex Scott's performance, as well as my review of Pebble Beach and Spyglass. I'm going to take some questions from some listeners and much more. All right, welcome in, everybody. So this week is just going to be me. No guests this week, but we do have some great guests coming up in upcoming weeks, so be sure to tune into those. It's going to be very informational, very entertaining, but some really star guests coming up that I'm extremely excited about. But as for this week, I just want to go over some things that are on my mind, give you some reviews of some things. But I want to start with, I've had a lot of people ask me, what is Bomb and Gouge? Bomb and Gouge, right? Seems like a lot of people don't seem to know really what that is, what it means. What it refers to is a style of play in golf. So Bomb and Gouge would be where you just basically hit your driver as hard as you can and don't worry as much about being in the fairway. Just get it as far down the hole as you can and then go find it and make it work and you know, get the ball in the hole from wherever it has landed after your tee shot. So I think it's an interesting style of play from the standpoint of it's more what guys are doing now. Obviously, driving it accurately is important. There's no doubt about it. But Mark Brody, if you know Mark Brody, has created the strokes gain statistic on the PGA Tour, and what he's proved is it's far better to be 100 yards out in the rough, obviously with a clear shot to the green, not a tree or something impeding your view, but being 100 yards out in the rough versus being 150 yards out in the fairway from the hole location. So that's what this refers to, and I love the expression also from the standpoint, like it's kind of how I live my life. You know, I feel like I just go as hard as I can, and wherever that lands me, then I just keep pushing and keep figuring it out from there. So that's the whole background to why the podcast is named Bomb and Gouge. So I do want to talk a little bit about Brooks Koepka. All right, so Brooks Koepka just wins the PGA Championship, and if you've been paying attention or read, there was this big thing that came out where he said one of the U.S. Opens he won, he bench pressed 225 pounds 14 times on Sunday before he teed off and won the U.S. Open. And that's got a lot of people freaking out in a bunch of different ways. A, the obvious part is how strong that guy is. He's an absolute tank. I mean, 225, 14 times. There's NFL players that aren't doing that. So just from that standpoint. But on the other side, people are saying, well, that seems like a bad thing. Isn't it a bad thing? And this has been argued for so long now. You know, ever since Tiger got hurt, really, in 08. And everyone starts blaming the workouts. And, you know, if you read Hank Haney's book, The Big Miss, yeah, there's probably some blame to be placed there. You know, I don't know that running in combat boots makes a whole lot of sense. As far as your health, it's going to be harder on your knees than running in, you know, athletic shoes. But anything you do that's physical, like working out, there's going to be risk of injury, of course. Right? But the people who are still trying to argue that working out is bad for golf, at this point, you're insane. Let me read the top 10 players in the world. Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, Justin Thomas, Justin Rose, John Rahm, Francisco Molinari. I should probably know that. That's really bad. Rory McIlroy, Jordan Spieth, Ricky Fowler, and Jason Day. All those guys are fit. All of them. And some of them are really, really fit. Like Dustin Johnson and Brooks Koepka, your world number one and number two. Those guys are extremely fit. Justin Thomas, I wouldn't say he's super strong, but he's fit. Rory McIlroy is certainly very fit. Jordan Spieth is fit. Jason Day works out all the time. I mean, John Rahm is huge. So when you look at a top 10 in the world like that, and oh, by the way, Tiger Woods has 14 majors, and is pretty darn ripped. So I'm looking at this, and I don't know how people can still say working out is bad. Oh, you're going to have this big risk of injury, or you'll get too tight. It's like, these are professional athletes. Like, they're working on everything all the time. They're not going to get tight. They're stretching. They're doing yoga. They're doing this and that. I just see so many benefits to working out properly, of course, right? There is a bad way to do it, but so many benefits to working out and producing more power, because going back to Mark Brody, these statistics have proved that being able to hit it far is such a massive advantage. It goes back to the idea of, if I hit it 20 or 30 yards further than you, and I do everything just as well as you, I'm going to beat you nearly every time, because the proximity to the hole difference from someone hitting from 100 yards to 120 yards is pretty big. All right. So if that even if it's a couple feet or 3 feet on average, right? If I'm hitting from 100 and you're hitting from 120 and we're of equal skill, just because I'm closer, I'm likely to hit it from 20 yards. Let's call it 3 to 5 feet closer. I don't know. I'd have to look it up. All right, but every foot I get closer to you, my odds of making that putt go up. So over the course of a tournament and over the course of a year, that adds up. And, you know, I just don't know how anyone can be against working out at this point, especially going back to that world top 10 that I just read. And that doesn't even include Tiger, who's probably going to find himself back into that world top 10 if he can stay healthy and that back holds up, you know, from that surgery. So I just think, you know, at Grand Valley, we work our guys out, you know, pretty hard. We're lifting a good amount and we're doing some explosiveness stuff and, you know, box jumps and trying to develop, you know, explosiveness and fast twitch muscle and also some strength as well, especially in the lower body. You know, we're always trying to get glutes, hamstrings. I can't even say glutes anymore. It's like ever since the Tiger thing about activating his glutes, it's really hard to not laugh every time I say that word because I think back to that. But I digress. But yeah, I mean, our guys are working out all the time, and we've seen a good trend in our program of guys gaining 10, 20, 30 yards. I actually don't know if I could think of anybody that's come through our program in the last 4 years that we haven't seen gain some club head speed, which is important. You know, I can't stress that enough, just the advantage that creates. And the other thing that this to me is the biggest advantage in power. And everyone knows the obvious of, oh yeah, he can reach this 580 yard par five and most guys can, or he's got wedge in, blah, blah, blah. The other way it's a huge advantage is we all have days where we drive it really poorly. All right. And you hit your driver everywhere. Your driver's a hard club to hit. You know, it's the biggest club head there is, so you'd think it'd be the easiest, but you know, obviously with the ball speed being higher, ball travels further, so any little mistake is going to be magnified and go further offline. So the thing that I would say is one of the biggest advantages, not talked about very often, is when I have a bad driving day, if you are a powerful player, let's say you can hit your 2-iron 260, which is not uncommon anymore. It's like amazing to me how many of these guys can hit their 2-irons 260. You're not going to miss a fairway with your 2-iron very often, if you're any good. So the ability to say, I'm having a horrible driving day, I'm going to put the driver away unless I need it, and be able to just knife 2-irons 260 down the middle all day, I mean, that is a huge advantage. You know, if that's, I wouldn't say that's the way I'd want to play all the time, because then you're taking away your advantage. But to know that even on my worst day, if I just got to get something in play, I can still have the distance off a 2-iron. Whereas a guy like me, you know, I'm a smaller stature and I don't swing it super fast. My driver goes 280. So if I have a bad driving day, there's nothing I can do. Like I got to keep hitting driver because I can't go down to 2-iron or 3-wood. You know, my 2-iron, I don't even have a 2-iron, I have a 3-iron. You know, my 3-iron goes 220. Like, I can't play a 7,100-yard golf course and hit it 220 off the tee all day. So many things factor in here and why fitness and power are important. And I just find it sad. We have some stubborn people that are trying to say it's a bad thing. I go back, I keep saying it. Read the top 10 world golf rankings. How can you argue it? I mean, all these guys are fit, you know? So now, for our listeners, you know, in this topic, I'm not saying you have to work out to be good at golf. What I'm saying is, if you want to be elite and the absolute best, it gives you an advantage. And when you're talking about that level of golf, everything matters. And any little advantage you can get, you need to take. You know, I know a lot of great golfers who are not fit, but they're limited in what they can do. You know, when I say a great golfer, I consider a scratch handicap a great golfer. Scratch golfer isn't playing on the PGA Tour, not even close. And I just don't think people realize that a lot of times. You know, that's, I could go on forever about this, but I think too often we think a scratch golfer is like close to the PGA Tour. A scratch golfer is a mile and a half and times 20 from being on the PGA Tour. I mean, it's not even close. You know, a PGA Tour player is going to be around a plus six. And then there's 1,000 of those, and only 150 of them are on the PGA Tour. So, you know, that's kind of my deal on fitness, and I just can't believe we're still talking about it, and there's still some people that try and claim it's not good. I don't know. I don't have any explanation for that, but I think there's enough proof out there where I don't know how you could argue it anymore. So, speaking of guys who work out and do all the right things and see massive improvement, Alex Scott on our team just got back this week from playing in the U.S. Amateur out at Pebble Beach, and I actually went out there and watched him for the two rounds of stroke play, and I was there 2 days before as well on the practice rounds, and just hanging out in Monterey and getting to check all that out. So, A, just kind of a recap on his performance. Took 11th in stroke play. Really, really tied for 11th. Really impressive finish. And he had a double bogey and a triple bogey, so it was nice to see him bounce back in stroke play, still finish 11th with two poor holes. Double bogeyed 7 at Pebble Beach the first day and triple bogeyed 13 at Spyglass the second day. Still managed to take 11th. So lost in the first round, a heartbreaker on match play, but obviously we're very proud of him, and it wasn't his ultimate goal. You know, he went there to win. That's what he does. He's trying to win every event he tees it up in, and you know, he didn't accomplish that goal, but that's the heartbreaker of golf, right? Is you don't get to win a lot. You know, they say if you win 5% of your PGA Tour, if you have a 20-year PGA Tour career and you win 5% of the time, you're a first ballot Hall of Famer. I mean, you're in. So that's the nature of this sport. We're always trying to win, but it's not one-on-one. So when you're playing 312 guys like you are at the U.S. Amateur, pretty hard to win. But it was a great performance nonetheless. And, you know, I can't say enough about Alex. And if you don't know who Alex Scott is, he came in as a freshman. I signed him my first year as Grand Valley head coach. And we were very excited about him. He was a really good player. We brought in a great class that year with Bryce Messner, Mitchell White, and Alex Scott. You know, all were very accomplished high school players. And Mitchell had won the GAM championship that summer coming into college, and all three of them were pretty darn good for their age. But Alex wasn't a star right from the gate. He was in and out of the lineup. He didn't really break through and have a good event until the conference championship his freshman year. He tied for first. Before that, I don't think he had a top 10. I don't know if he had many top 20s. You know, he was just shooting a lot of mid to high 70s rounds and, you know, just kind of finding his way and learning about the game and what it takes. But the thing that he's done that I haven't seen anyone else do, at least all in all the time, is just that. I mean, he is all in all the time. Everything he does is built around becoming a better player. Foam rolls every day, works out 6 days a week, He practices in the summer 6 to 8 hours a day. In the school year, you know, you got class and some other things, so he's probably down to about 4 hours a day. In the school year would be my guess. I mean, I don't want to break any rules here. It's not like I have a team practice for 4 hours a day. Of course not. I'm just saying I've heard rumors that he practices a lot. So, you know, he busts it, and he's always trying to figure out how to get better. You know, that never, he's obsessed, and he's so disciplined. I mean, he just does everything right, and it's great for our program beyond just his play, because we got a bunch of young guys now. They get to look at him and say, okay, you want the blueprint? You want the recipe for how to get really good? Do what this guy does. You know, he doesn't make mistakes day to day. He's extraordinarily consistent in his work ethic and the way he approaches every day. And that's what's really led him to be such a great player. So, awesome event. It was so great to be out there. I want to talk a little bit about Pebble and Spyglass, because I had never been out. I'd been to California one time before, and that was for a U.S. Junior Amateur in 2000 and probably 2006, one of the two. And that was in San Diego at Rancho Santa Fe Country Club, where Phil Mickelson is a member. But anyway, so I go out to Monterey to watch Alex, and stayed in downtown Monterey. Just beautiful little town. I had so much fun out there. Yet Monterey State Park right there on the beach, and you take a little 3.5 mile drive down to Pebble Beach. So a lot of you, I'm sure, have seen Pebble Beach on TV. Some of you have probably been there, but for those of you who haven't, you know, I'll describe it to you a little bit. It does not look like what it looks like on TV. And what I mean by that, we all hear, TV doesn't do it justice, blah, blah, blah. You always hear that, right? Like, Augusta's the famous one. Like, oh, you, man, you can't even imagine until you actually get there. Well, think about Pebble that you don't see on TV. And Coach Lubon from Michigan State alluded to it in the previous episode where we were kind of talking about this event coming up. Those greens are tiny. I mean, they are really, really small. Like, some of the smallest greens I've ever seen. And you have the ocean on, like, almost every hole. So, obviously, there's the beauty standpoint. But it just was narrower than I expected. Like, 18, it looks like it's a mile wide on TV. That hole's narrow. Now, it's short. It's a short par 5. So, it's not uber difficult. But, oh, my gosh, it's narrow. Like, it is not a very wide hole. You got to hit quality golf shots, which I hope I'm not saying anything that is surprising. It holds a U.S. Open, all right? It's holding the U.S. Open in 2019. So, obviously, we know it's difficult, but I just was very surprised at just how small the greens were. But it's a beautiful place. And then Spyglass was really good. I was a huge fan of Spyglass. I think it's every bit as good of a golf course as Pebble Beach, maybe even a little better. Maybe. It's close. But just from the pure golf standpoint, it's so good. But it just doesn't have the same views Pebble Beach has. You know, that's really obviously where Pebble makes its mark, is you're on these cliffs over the ocean all day. And you got the beach there and the waves crashing in. And the iconic holes like 7 and 18, you know, they're just incredible. So from that standpoint, you know, I would say if you ever have the opportunity to go out to Pebble Beach, you definitely need to do it. It's, you know, if you're going to try and play it, it's $500 a round. I would say save up and make it work, because it's worth it. And you got to stay on property too. So you're going to have to pinch some pennies for a while, or maybe you're just really wealthy and you can make it happen whenever you want. But it's really, really good. So I would definitely recommend getting out there if you can. And so, yeah, the USAM was a phenomenal experience for Alex as well. So I'm going to cut here. And I had asked on Twitter, if you ever want to look me up on Twitter, it's Gary Bissell Golf. And then there's the actual Bomb and Gouge podcast Twitter handle as well. But mine is at Gary Bissell Golf. That's also my Instagram. And so I'd ask, you know, if anyone has any questions or any topics. And so Jason Gus, my good friend and the number one instructor in the state of Michigan, who we had on a couple weeks ago, he wanted to know about my overall health today. So this is kind of a joke, and that's really all Jason ever does. He's a really funny guy, if you've ever had the pleasure of getting to know him, and everything's always kind of sarcastic, and him and I are a lot alike in that way. So what he's referring to is, I talked to him earlier today, and I'm a little tired today. Jason, I'm a little tired. So I had a couple friends over to the Grand Rapids area yesterday. I went and played Pilgrim's Run, which I'll give Pilgrim's Run a little plug real quick. If you've never been to Pilgrim's Run, it's in the Newaygo, Howard City area, more like Newaygo, about halfway in between Grand Rapids and Big Rapids on 131 North there. Unbelievable golf course, and no one knows about it. You got to get out there. You got to play it. It's unbelievable. The thing I love so much about it is it's cut through the woods, and on every hole, you feel like you're the only person on the golf course. You can't see other holes from any hole. It's so great. So you kind of feel like you're the only ones out there. It's just phenomenal. But yeah, so I had a couple friends over, and we played euchre all night. And so I'm a little tired today, Jason. Thanks for your concern. Michigan Golf Live tweeted in at me. They want a lengthy segment on the connection between dessert consumption and scoring. And it says, people need to know the truth. Okay, so really appreciate that tweet coming in. Dessert consumption and scoring. You know, I think the serious answer, which I know it's not a very serious question, but the serious answer would be stay away from high sugar things when you're on the golf course. Certainly a spike, you know, in golf, we're always trying to stay even keel the whole time. So if you get a big spike in your emotions and then the crash and all that, it's probably not going to be good for scoring. But I will say, you don't ever pass up an opportunity at creme brulee. So if creme brulee is an option, you got to get it. And you know what? You'll probably play great because you're going to be so happy after eating that creme brulee. I mean, you're just going to be ecstatic, which being in a great place mentally, we know is great for performance as well. So, you know, I would say the short answer is the connection is positive there. If you eat creme brulee, I'll guarantee you play better. That's just as factual as it gets. Garen Lucius, who is our former, what would his title have been? Game Ops Manager at Grand Valley State. And unfortunately, he left to go down to Florida. Apparently, he thought being on the beach all, you know, year round would be a better lifestyle, which is absurd. So thanks for leaving us, Garen. And Garen is a former All-American track athlete at Grand Valley. He's in really fit, big guy, and he eats like crap a lot. And he asked, because this is what's the only thing that's ever on his mind, what's your favorite meal at the Meadows? The Meadows is our golf course at Grand Valley State. Once again, give a little plug for the Meadows. Great golf course, open style, not a lot of trees, long heather. Greens are always running great. So come out and play the Meadows. But we also have a great grill. And not many people know about it. I don't know why. You know, I don't even think our players really understand how extensive the menu is at the Meadows. And it's very good. I'm not surprised Garen wants to know about food. I would say, and this goes against kind of my belief in, you know, eating healthy and being fit, but the best, I think, at the Meadows is their mozzarella sticks. Their mozz sticks are as good as anywhere I've ever been. I've also heard I won't eat them because I try and stay somewhat healthy, but I've heard their buffalo wings are incredible. And this information was given to me by Owen Rush, one of our players, who's a buffalo wing connoisseur. he eats buffalo wings probably way too much. But if there's someone where I believe in their opinion about buffalo wings, I would say that's Owen Rush. And he says, he endorses it wholeheartedly, that the buffalo wings at the Meadows are phenomenal. So, Garen, next time you come back, I think you should get an appetizer of the Mott Sticks, and then your main course should be the buffalo wings. Probably mix in, I think we have Perrin Black on tap right now. Phenomenal beer. And you could probably mix that in, and then just check yourself into the hospital immediately afterward, because that's going to be a deadly combination there, but it'll be good. If it's your last meal, you know, you'll die happy. So I appreciate sending in those questions. All right. So last thing I wanted to talk about today is random. I'll mix in a little bit of golf stuff here, but I have recently become obsessive with ping pong. I bought a ping pong table, put it in my basement, and it's gotten out of control. I think about it all the time. It's like all I want to do. And, you know, I'm trying to be the best golf coach I possibly can be. I want to be the best golf instructor I can possibly be. And I just have ping pong in my mind. I want to be a ping pong champion, I think. I haven't quite decided yet. But it's, I could see it in my future, you know. One thing I think is a big disadvantage for me, I'm only about 5'7", somewhere around there. I think it's a big disadvantage to be short in ping pong. You know, my main miss is long. Like, I don't get the ball down fast enough. And I think just logically, if I was 6'2", 6'3", that would be much easier and you'd have a much more downward strike on the ball. So, yeah, I don't know. You know, I haven't even asked him yet. But I want to have Nick Pumford, who is Oakland University's men's golf coach, head men's golf coach. He was the assistant at Michigan, University of Michigan, for a number of years, I think 7-8 years, somewhere in that neighborhood, and then became Oakland's head coach. And he's done a great job. He's an awesome guy. He's a really good coach, and I think he would have a lot of great information to benefit this podcast. I just got to be careful of that. You know, I don't want to – we recruit against him all the time. So he's a friend of mine. But so Nick Pumford, Coach Pumford at Oakland, is supposedly a legend in ping pong. Like, but he's taller. He's like 6 foot, 6'1". I don't know how tall he is. Somewhere in that neighborhood. And but I've heard, he hasn't lost in a couple of years. Apparently, he's just a absolute Greek god when it comes to ping pong. You know, just mythical legend. And that's the story on him. So I got to see this in person, and I got to get some tips from him. Because like I said, I'm serious. I want to get really good at ping pong. It's kind of the next, I think, major thing in my life that I see me just going down that path. And I've got one of those personalities, you know, bomb and gouge personality, guys. Like, I'm all in. Once I get obsessive about something, that's where it goes. So, but going back to golf, a lot of golfers play ping pong. It's like a common thing. You know, a lot of golfers, you always hear about, you know, at the Ryder Cup, right? With the United States team, they would always play ping pong all night. There's some stories about some great matches between Phil and Tiger on the ping pong table, not just on the golf course. So, you know, I think if there's something to be said for that, you're developing hand-eye coordination. You know, obviously there's a big difference there in a moving ball versus stationary in golf. There's a face-to-path relationship like there is in golf, right? If you want to spin it, the same rules apply as in golf, right? Your path, you change it, and then you match the face in the opposite direction to make the ball spin. So, you know, there's some applications there. I'm not advocating by any means that if you play a lot of ping pong, you're just going to get better at golf. I don't think that's true at all. But I just think there's a couple things in there, you know. At least I'm trying to justify it for myself at the very least. So, All right. That's going to wrap it up for me in this week's Bomb and Gouge podcast. Next week, we will have a guest on the show, and I will be releasing that guest about mid this week. And like I said, the next couple weeks in general, kind of over the next 3-4 weeks, not that I'm ever not excited about any guests, but we've got some great ones coming up. So stay tuned. We appreciate you listening to the Bomb and Gouge podcast, and we'll see you next week.